All right.
All right. You guys want to start the show?
Let's start the show.
Find the sugar.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Saturday Morning Cereal. It's the podcast what does celebrate all those themes of Saturday morning cartoons. And those themes, hey, if you got a brain in your head, you'll notice they've been growing up with us too. Hey, what do you know? It's me, Dan Grimshay, yet again. Like, this streak has been going on for over a decade, y'all, because I am still your host.
Yeah.
And then you just heard Marquis, my sort of co-host, jump in a little too early. Go ahead, Marquis.
Sorry. I got a little excited because we're finishing off our 10th season. This is awesome.
Holy shit. Well, that must mean it's around Comic-Con time.
That's right.
Well, let's check in with our other co-host, occasional visitor, Booty Call, Johnny Heck.
Hey, yo, buddies. Yeah, 10 years, 10th episode, believe it or not. I mean, I've been here quite a bit.
Right on, man. Yeah, it's been...
It's been more than 10 episodes, by the way. I was kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I think you've been here. You've been here for at least...
I went through the archives. It turns out, Johnny, you've been on at least 12 episodes over the past decade.
Let's just call it a baker's dozen.
That's right.
All right. So, yes, it is Comic-Con season, y'all.
Yes.
That's probably why you tuned in, quite honestly. You care more about the con than us.
But this is not a Comic-Con preview show.
That's what I meant to start with.
Yeah.
Not a Comic-Con preview show. Coincidence in timing.
Yeah, this is just... We are going to talk about Comic-Con right now because it's coming up, but this is not a preview show.
It feels like our hands are tied there, but where we have power, we don't care if you know what's happening at Comic-Con.
This is actually more of a Comic-Con review show.
Yes. Before the show, Marky actually slapped us and said, we will not talk about Comic-Con previews.
There is no Hall H.
This is not what's coming up in Comic-Con. We're going to talk about what happens in Comic-Con. We're going to talk about what's good to do at Comic-Con. We're going to talk about what fun we've had at Comic-Con. And we have an awesome guest to rake it all in.
Oh, you're talking about Joanna Higginbotham?
That's right, the composer extraordinaire.
That's right, because if nothing else, you can count on Saturday Morning Cereal to bring you an interview with a composer.
Yeah, and not just any composer, but she's been doing a lot of work with a lot of the Genndy Tartakovsky.
Yes, if you like animation stuff, and you're a grown-up, or a child, or exactly in our little narrow demographic, hot damn. Genndy Tartakovsky is a...
Oh, dude, he's pretty... He's the Godzilla of animators.
Yeah. He advertises on our show. We try to advertise on his show.
He's a friend of the show, by the way. I think he's been on a couple times. We've talked to him a few times. He's, like I said, he's the Godzilla of animators.
And friend of the show, what has he done exactly, for those that may not know?
Well, he's the most famous for Samurai Jack, I would say. Dexter's Lab was another one. He did the Clone Wars micro series, and so on and so on and so on. The guy is a legend. And
yes, in animation, somehow, like, one of those did, like, sparse, childlike figures.
Yep.
But made them a dynamic, exciting action sort of format. I don't know animation, but I can tell you that he did something kind of different.
Yeah.
With all the usual tropes back in the 90s and the early 2000s.
You can spot his style just a mile away. It's so amazing. And in that same vein, the music is it's the same thing. Like when you see a Tartakovsky show, you can hear a Tartakovsky show too. And our guest has a little
to
do with
our deaf listeners.
Yeah, hopefully they can see it still. But yeah,
we should go to video one day so they could actually realize what's going on.
No, we should probably drop that premise immediately. We went as far as we could with that.
I will say though, you know, to Marky's point about the music of it, there's so much in a lot of Tartakovsky's animation where there's no dialogue for long segments.
Action.
So the music, yeah, there's action, but the music carries the action in a lot of ways, and maybe vice versa, but the music is so good. And with Higginbottom's Samurai Jack performance, and we're going to see a little bit or hear a little bit of the, you know, the orchestra is just, you know, amazing. It's the star of the show in a lot of ways, in my
opinion.
And
you know, why would we even talk about that? Well, I'll tell you why. Because it's not inside of Comic-Con at all. You got to go, air quotes, to Comic-Con to catch it. But as we always do on this show, we know IGN, Kotaku, they've all got you covered on what you can go and see, break down your schedule to the minute, where are the bathrooms at Comic-Con. We are coming to you as grizzled, hardened veterans of Comic-Con.
That's right.
We live and breathe San Diego all year long. Mm-hmm. And at this point, we are paying four times what you are to live here. But we will not stop because we give you the most visceral, most, I don't know, down to the tax Comic-Con experience, preview, advice, you know, gonzo journalism that we can. So we're not talking fucking Hall H, guys.
Yeah. Like,
what
actually,
are you going to see when you're outside?
Yeah, like
Comic-Con?
A lot of this stuff, because we're actually going to, like, right now, this particular Comic-Con review show, we're going to highlight the activations that are outside.
Well, pre-review.
It's a pre-review.
Pre-review?
Yeah.
Pre-review, but with a UE, like the Broadway. Yeah, let's not go down that
hole. Review, preview?
These are the activations.
My nose is bleeding now.
These are the activations that happen outside of the convention center. These are things that you can walk around in the gas lamp. You could walk around by the Hilton Bayfront, by the Marriott Bayfront. You could walk around, you know, and just kind of stumble into a line of some kind. Believe me, there will be a line, and you will just wait for something, and you're going to experience something amazing.
Yeah, hey, gang, it's free shit.
Yeah.
You know, if you are
among the 99.9999999% of the world population who couldn't get a Comic-Con pass this year, don't worry. Come on down. We'll Comic-Con you up.
Yeah.
You just got to not fall for the usual traps. Everything that, you know, what is it? Rockpapershotgun.com or whatever is telling you to do. That.
Yeah. So I'm going to save mine because mine's the Adult Swim annual kind of celebration. So I'm going to save that to the end. But I would like to know, Shay, Johnny Heck, I want to know what your guys' kind of experiences are with the installations. Shay.
Oh, well, yeah, it sounds like if we're going by order that you said, I'm going to take a lead here. I remember, and this is a big one, there have been plenty of them, because personally, I don't like being stuck inside.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably the least Comic-Con friendly among us.
True.
That's a known fact.
Yes.
I love the phenomenon, but I don't have to take part. But nonetheless, I get dragged down there, and it turns out within like 10 square miles throughout the gas lamp, without having to deal with the extreme crowds in the convention center, there's plenty to do and see. And probably one of my favorite was the Batmobile exhibit.
Oh, God, that was a good one.
This was probably a good 12, 13 years ago. I don't know
if it's
come many times, but I haven't seen it there.
I would say 10. I would say 10.
You would say 10?
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll say about a decade ago.
I would say when we were just starting this little podcast of ours. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, if I weren't playing coy anymore, I would say it was summer of 2012. But it's so hard to explain, but trust me. If you've ever seen a movie where rich people pull their boats up to like downtown, this is the setting of it. It's right next to the Hilton
Bayfront.
Bayfront Hilton, right outside of the convention center, right along
literally
the area
a marina.
Where there are yachts that are owned by the CEOs of Microsoft with three helicopters on them.
Yeah, kind of yachts with helicopters.
They devote so much room to this. Back in 2012, there was an entire display of every, up to 2012, Batmobile that had been
in a movie, in a live action,
including
every live action Batmobile.
If I recall, although I cannot find a picture of it anymore, the original 66.
Yep.
What was it? The Mercury Sunbeam?
The Ford Futura.
Ford Futura? Yeah, are we sure?
Yeah, pretty sure.
I wish Jimmy could be with us.
Oh, he's not here. Yeah.
But no, screw the guy.
R.A.P.
The Joker finally got it.
Yeah, but yes, we have. Yeah, it was the original Ford Futura, and it was awesome. And like, the very first time that I saw it, because I was there with you, I think I was with you or I had seen it before, but like, I didn't even know that the like stripes, the like piping stripes, because yes, it has a red bat symbol, which is accurate, and it's got the red siren light on the top, but the actual piping like around the like the edging, it's orange. That didn't come out in the movie. I mean, in the show very well. Or in any of the toys that I've seen, or any of the Hot Wheels, I didn't know that it was actually orange stripes. So when you see the real thing,
you can tell everyone how this changes life.
It does. It changes. Like, you're like, oh my God, I didn't even know that. You know, it was like the first time that I saw like the Han Solo Hoth jacket. I was like, it's fucking brown. Like, it's weird, you know, because you...
Well, it reminds me of, like, of when I was younger and I went to Universal Studios and I saw the kit car from Knight Rider.
Yeah,
and I had no idea it was bright pink. Because it always looked...
That's not true.
So
that's
black
not true. That's
on
not
TV. True. Oh, man. Go ahead. Who do you think is going to get canceled? Yeah. Anyway, I do remember going through that, and I got... This was early days, especially for an old fart like me. In the social media landscape, and I think up to that time in 2012, it was the most likes I ever got on a picture.
Oh wow!
Like I felt viral with I'm gonna guess around 70 likes from just friends of mine. Too.
Yeah,
it wasn't technically didn't get viral. But I was like, man, even when
people
said,
love it.
Hey, my mom beat cancer. I got like 12 likes. But a picture of me with a Christopher Nolan bat.
The Tumbler.
Mobile. The Tumbler.
Yeah, the Tumbler.
Or Lucius Fox's tank.
Well, they had the Bane camouflage Tumbler, and then they had the Batmobile Tumbler, which was the black painted Tumbler.
Yep.
And then they had the Val Kilmer Batmobile. They had the Tim Burton Batmobile, which is my favorite Batmobile. They had the Batman 66 Batmobile. And then they had the George Clooney Batmobile penis, for lack of a better description.
I'm sure there's better descriptions out there, but let's go with that.
It's just a big penis. That's all it is. I'm like, that looked like a penis. That's what I remember thinking. Yeah. I was like, orange stripes on the 66, penis on the George Clooney one.
Hey, it is the Ace and Gary ride.
Who would have thought a movie with bat nipples would have a cock rocket for the bat?
Yeah, that's basically what it was. Yeah.
So anyway, they basically used, I'm going to guess, per day, $4,000 worth of San Diego real estate to show the bat penis.
And by the way, these were all
could just walk up and do it. This is out in public.
And these were all fully functional automobiles that rolled and drove by themselves there. I mean,
well, the whole time I was there, I saw them get rolled. I never saw anybody drive any of them. So,
no, but they were drivable vehicles. They had motors, they had wheels. Like, it wasn't like a paper mache car. These were all real cars.
Well, they weren't fucking down the freeway together like in a. I mean, they probably went on a rig, but I understand they were functional.
Yeah, they were functional vehicles. Yeah.
But could you imagine driving down the like a 405 and just seeing all these fuckers just in a formation? That'd be kind of
that would have been kind of cool
actually.
Yeah, that would have been a good traffic breaker.
Yeah.
And if you're not from Southern California, you don't know what that is.
There actually is. I live in the Escondido area of the San Diego County. There
well, you
is,
say that, but what's your social security number?
Yeah. North there, County trash.
There, and I'm sure if you know, whoever is listening out there, if you guys can confirm this, you can tweet me at StayClassySDCC. But there is a Tim Burton Batmobile that lives in Escondido because I see it driving around all the time. Yeah, so there is, and I've like mentioned this
describe
to other Batman
all
fanatics.
The time, like rush hour, like on his way to the
I've been living there.
Adjuster job, or,
yeah, I've been living in Escondido for about 7 or 8 years, and I've probably seen it 5 to 7 times. I, you know, you fucking notice a Batmobile. Yeah. You know, like, you're like, oh my god, it's a fucking
Batmobile. At the stoplight, there's a guy driving, just looking at his watch, like fucking traffic. Yeah. Like, I got crimes to solve. Like, is he dressed
so
up?
So as the sun goes down, I hide the shadows. But right now, I'm in the busiest intersection.
But I've actually brought this up to like Batmobile in like, you know, to Batman fans that are, you know, friends of mine or whatever, and like, oh yeah, that's
Frank. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Frank. Whatever, you know, like they actually know of this guy that lives there who has a Batmobile. Yeah.
His name's Bruce. I don't worry about him. He's basically a nerd. Yeah.
He's got a trust fund baby.
It's pretty funny.
You know?
But there is something really cool about like being next to these cars and seeing this thing. And you know, obviously there's a lot of cosplay. So like one of the pictures that's in my phone, somebody was dressed head to toe as fucking, and he was built as Bane. So I have a picture of him in front of one of the tumblers, like with his hands like on his collar, and he looked freaking badass. And I'm like, oh my god, what an amazing opportunity for this guy. This guy dressed up like that. He obviously put in the work. His muscles look fucking tight. And then he goes out there.
He crawled out of that pit of hell that he was raised in just to go to Comic-Con.
And funny you mentioned the cosplay. Actually, one of the cars that Shay saw was actually three people in cosplay dressed up as a so, you know.
It was a human centipede to make. They were making the Clooney Batmobile.
Yeah, that was the cock rocket that they did. Yeah, so.
So, yeah, all right. So that was a great installation.
Yeah, that
Johnny
was
Heck,
fine.
What's yours?
Johnny Heck, what did you see outside of Comic-Con for free that any homeless person in San Diego might stumble across? Yeah,
not going to be as funny, but I do play a online video game. It's Star Wars The Old Republic because I'm you know, goddamn nerd. And it's a free-to-play MMORPG. I don't get paid money by this. But anyway, they had a meetup for fans. You could go for free. It was at a hotel near Spreckles Theater. You go in the ballroom. You meet the developers. They give you a couple drink tickets. They give you some past apps. You talk to people. In-game currency. Cool. The thing ends. I mentioned it's next door to Spreckles Theater because at the time, Conan O'Brien was hosting his Comic-Con special at Spreckles. So when you walk out of the fucking hotel, it's the guest exit. So a bunch of people are kind of standing
milling around.
Yeah, milling around. So we're standing there, and then, you know, just kind of chatting, like, what's going on? Like, who's fucking here? And, you know, kind of asking around. It was the cast of X-Men Apocalypse. So this was like 2016, let's say. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're standing there. Just, again, I didn't have Comic-Con tickets that year. I think, I don't know what, I didn't get tickets. I think I had, we had press passes the next day, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, whatever.
But all of a sudden, Michael Fassbender walks out. James McAvoy walks out. Nicholas Hoult walks out. Just all, you know, and we're standing like, from me to you guys, if you can't see, I'm about 18 feet. No, I'm like a couple, I'm like a foot away from Marquee. And they're right here. You know, and it was rad, and several other actors. I mean, some Game of Thrones actors walked out, and it was really cool. And they're signing autographs. But one is Olivia Munn was in this movie, and this is not to talk shit about Olivia Munn, but she walks out with Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, do it, yeah. Queen.
And by the way, Fassbender, McAvoy, Holt, all these guys signed every autograph. They walked down the line, signed every autograph. Olivia Munn and Aaron Rodgers walk right by the line, get right in a limo, and leave. But before they
and
did,
also. The only two Americans, if I know.
I'm gonna blame Rogers for this. Sure. But go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
But I decided to be, you know, a little bit of a dick, and I just go, Rogers, Brett Favre was better, just really loud, and he heard me because I was, you know,
pretty close. But
you project.
And also, you know, obviously,
cost him the Super Bowl the next season.
A professional athlete would have kicked the ever living shit out of me. But nevertheless, everyone was really
instead,
cool.
Instead, Olivia do it, right? And, yeah. If I remember the story.
No. They had gotten the limo and left. But at the very end, Conan and Andy Richter come out, and they'd given away exclusive bobbleheads to the crowd. They signed all of them. They actually had food in the green room that they brought out on trays.
That's awesome.
And then the crowd, then there was cop cars trying to like block off the area. And the crowd just left the trays on the hood and the top of the cop cars from the green room, which is funny. So
that's what do you awesome. Mean, anyway, is that a statement? I don't know.
It's just like, fuck you, Kappas.
That's how Comic-Con is, man. It's crazy.
Comic-Con is like, fuck the police? I don't remember
well, we
that
didn't flip it over and burn it. I mean, people just left the tray on top of it.
But it's probably the only car there. Leave a couple of the leftover sandwiches for them?
I mean,
the cops eat for free wherever
they go. I don't want to accidentally back the blue or anything, you fucking animals, but really?
I mean,
this was a Comic-Con protest?
Well, they did.
I just didn't see this.
I think what you don't understand is that whatever was left from the cops was on the top of the cop car.
Yeah, they left the bacon.
Here we go. I'm glad we went on this journey.
But yeah, it was awesome. Right, and all that was free. I just stumbled into this free and kind of nerdy video game event and then stumbled down, and you see all these celebrities from very close, and it was just rad. I'm not an autograph guy, but just seeing them kind of interacting with them was really cool. And everyone was really sweet except for one.
And honestly, this just goes to further the point that if you cannot afford a Comic-Con ticket,
or if you can't, I don't even think it's a place to sleep downtown. It's not even really about afford. It's just about the opportunity to get one. These are hard to get.
I shouldn't say afford. If you are unable to, for whatever reason, but you really want to be a part of Comic-Con,
just go downtown.
Walk around.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Bring a sleeping bag.
You don't even need
because you are not going to be able to rent a hotel room. That is just a given. Yeah. But you might accidentally run into a AAA list star.
And 100%. And I'm going to mention a few of these installations that I've seen or that I've been a part of or whatever. This was when The Walking Dead was the biggest that you've ever seen before. And so they had this huge, like, zombie walk that was downtown. Straight. And so everyone that was dressed as a freaking zombie, like, they were all walking and just cruising downtown, like, around the ballpark and stuff like that.
The Walking Dead did that for years.
They did it for a couple of years, about a decade. It was so cool.
Every dollar they say filming in Atlanta... They blew advertising in San Diego, I promise you.
And one year...
They rented out the ballpark.
One year, they took up a whole street that was in the downtown area. And they freaked out a family that was in a car. As it turns out, the driver of the car, I believe he was hearing impaired.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yep. And so he goes up to a stop sign, and then all of a sudden, all these zombies are walking all around
him. I think he accidentally went through what was supposed to be a roadblock.
Yeah.
Ended up at a stop sign that he wasn't supposed to be at. It was supposed to be no traffic. So I think from what I understand, the people playing the zombies were like,
hey, get out of the way.
Let's improvise.
Yeah.
This is something for somebody's video. Let's jump on it and be super zombie.
Yeah. And then he ended up freaking out and he fucking just took off. I think somebody got hurt, but not too bad. I'm sorry if somebody got...
Somebody did get hurt, but all that did was make the other zombies more angry.
They were all beating on this guy's car.
So you can see it was just joke beating on the windshield at first.
And he couldn't hear anything.
They start slamming the windshield.
That was crazy.
It honestly is almost laughable.
All right. So that was one of the things that I remember happening.
Again, terrible example. Most of these are organized and safe.
But also, I think it also just kind of goes to the excitement of all the participants and kind of like all the energy that obviously if it's not corralled or if it's not monitored, you know, it can kind of get a little crazy down there, you know, but you could be doing something really, really simple. Like you're at a Starbucks and then all of a sudden there's a Thor, there's a stormtrooper, there's an elf, you know, like waiting in line with you. Even like just kind of hanging out all of a sudden in downtown at that time, you get a Comic-Con experience just kind of being there.
It is probably the most amazing publicly available people watching you can do in the world.
Absolutely. And
because
picture taking.
The level of cosplay.
It's crazy.
These days is insane.
It's insane. Especially with like 3D modeling and all this stuff. It's crazy how much fun that you can have when you go down there. And so you don't need a badge to do any of this. I remember one year the most recent live action Tick that was on Amazon. They had this huge installation downtown and you went in and it had a replica of like the little bodega. You can go in there and like you can buy stuff.
Weird because there's bodegas all over Gaslamp.
I know, but this was a Tick bodega.
Yeah, I am.
And then you could
get Ticks in the bodegas.
Yeah, you can get Ticks in all bodegas. Yeah,
San Diego. To be honest,
I think you're right. Yeah, I think that's true. But you know, like so they had that, and then one of them
not going to be invited to advertise Comic-Con next year.
I remember. Okay, so. Another kind of big thing about these like installations is that sometimes a big studio will literally rent out a restaurant.
Oh yeah.
And then make it
multiple.
Yep.
And then make it a restaurant of its property or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it'll be like the house it'll be a restaurant that's in the town of Eureka or something. You know what I mean?
Yes. That was a popular one they brought back multiple years.
Yeah.
The sci-fi show Everyone Forgets Eureka.
Yeah.
All of us here in San Diego who, you know, didn't spend a lot of time inside the convention center at Comic-Con, we had some great sandwiches at the Eureka Cafe.
Yeah, and they'll deck it out inside. They'll, like, have a Eureka menu or whatever. So there's just all these little cool little things that are going on, these installations that happen outside. Paramount Studios has been really busy
We did a Star Trek one.
You
and Jimmy the Jam went to a Star Trek. They had Star Trek themed drinks.
That was so much fun.
It was rad.
Yeah, it was absolutely great.
And I do have one piece of advice, actually, before we kind of kick it to the interview. I would say as you're walking down the street, if you're solo or with some friends, keep your head up. Don't bury your head in your phone because you might walk by a celebrity because they are fans too. They walk down the road, and if your hand is buried in your stupid phone, you may miss somebody. Yeah. Like, keep your eyes
up.
If
you walk past a 6'4" Pikachu, might have been.
I remember once I literally crossed the street with Josh Brolin once. And, you know, I noticed him like when I was halfway across the street, literally right next to me. Like we were bumping shoulders. And then like we like got to the end of the street and I was like, oh, yo, what's up? Goonies, man. And he's like, yeah, Goonies. And then that was it.
And then he snapped and you fucking disappeared, right? But no, these guys. Yeah,
also,
I mean,
anybody you say that to randomly on a public street corner.
Yeah, they're going to go to Goonies. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, Goonies. Yeah. Goonies. Yeah,
see
yeah,
you, buddy.
But yeah, keep your head off your phone. Keep your eyes off your phone. Take a look, man. They're,
I know.
They're
but also don't be a dick if you notice them.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't, but you know,
there's
I don't,
a reason they're trying to shuffle past you with their head.
And by the
down
way, yeah, if you bombard them with like selfie requests, then that begets a crowd. I actually
prefer not to bother them. I don't ask for selfies, but I love the experience of running into people.
But if you're people watching, that's the best experience. Just say what's up.
Yeah, catch them. You can tell people you saw them, even if you're wrong. But nothing ruins Comic-Con faster for me when I hear some young girl shriek, "There's Dan Grimshay!" Yeah. And I know it's basically over.
And then panties start dropping.
This is your kid. This is your child.
I wish you wouldn't bring up the three times that happened.
All right, but one of the most amazing installations is the Adult Swim Crazy Carnival installation.
I'm not
going to talk about it right now. Why? Because we have an awesome guest interview coming up.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, didn't she participate in You know what? Let's not go too deep into it. I'm talking about Joanna Higginbottom.
That's right.
Yes,
she
indeed.
She is not only so nice that she talked to us last year at Comic-Con. Uh-huh.
Brilliant, talented, amazing.
But she apparently got hired to do the music for Genndy Tartakovsky.
Yeah.
And this guy doesn't write dialogue, so that's a pretty big job. And I'd like to explain to you beat by beat exactly how she got the job, but I've been warned that since we have the audio, she should
do it. Yeah, let's just kick it off.
Are you sure?
Let's do this.
You guys don't want my take on it?
Nope, I'm excited to hear about
it. All right.
Let's hear from Joanna.
Magic interview machine, bring us to Joanna Higginbottom.
I talked to her. This is me.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
In a rare case
of one-on-one.
Marquis could not get any of us to do it for him.
Yeah, you guys were busy, so I did it myself.
So we actually have him interviewing a celebrity. Yeah. Take it away, Magic Interview Machine.
Meanwhile. Oh, right on. Well, for the microphone, please introduce yourself and what you do.
My name is Joanna Higginbottom, and I am the composer of Primal, Unicorn Warriors Eternal, and Samurai Jack.
Samurai Jack. Let's just get into that. Obviously, I think it's hard to think of another show where just about everything of it is iconic. Like, it's got its own look, its own sound effects. Obviously, all the voice actors are fantastic, mm-hmm. but another part of it is the music is iconic. It's just like, I can hear it. It's like thunder. So, you know, tell us about that experience working with Genndy Tartakovsky, I think I said it right.
You said it perfectly.
Just about the whole process, because that's a big deal.
It is. Yeah. It is, actually. And I didn't, you might hear my accent, I didn't grow up in this country. And so the first few seasons of Samurai Jack, of course, when we were much younger and I was too young to be composing for film mm-hmm. and TV. So I moved here and worked in film and TV. And then we got the opportunity to work with Genndy on the last season of Samurai Jack. And when I got the show, I went home to my husband and was like, there's this animated show about a samurai. And he's like, you are not talking about Samurai Jack, are you?
No way.
And I was like, yeah, I think that's what it's called. Yeah, I'm going to be scoring it with Tyler Bates and Genndy. He's like, Genndy Tartakovsky. Yeah. So I honestly think that helped me going in because I didn't feel the pressure of all the seasons before and honestly how much it was loved by the fans, because then I would feel this innate need to make it utterly amazing, and hopefully what we did was, but at least the pressure wasn't there. But yes, you're absolutely right in that it is so unique. It is so gorgeous, honestly, whether it's the dialogue, the animation, the colouring, everything. And that all goes back to Genndy. He has such a precise vision in everything that he does. And working with him on both seasons of Primal now and now Unicorn Warriors Eternal. And actually right now I'm doing a feature film with him called Fixed, which hopefully is coming out next year.
hopefully something
and
comes
out. With all the strikes and everything going on, where you know everything's up in the air. So, but we are recording in Scotland full orchestra next week on Thursday. But he, with every single project that we do with him, he has such a specific vision, whether that be sound effects, whether that be the colouring, the animation, whether that be music. And he is one of the wonderful directors that we work with that says what he wants at the beginning and does not change his mind. He knows what it is. And therefore, we get more time and opportunity to make that thing as good as it can be, as opposed to let's try this. And then you've wasted a lot of your time finding it. And then the thing that finally works, you have to kind of rush out. So it's great.
Do you think that not knowing like coming into it, since you were not a fan of it, you were not even aware of it, do you think that that helped you at the beginning, or did you have to catch up? Like, do you think it hurt you at the beginning?
I definitely had to catch up, and the first thing I did was, of course, my research and watched as much of it as possible before we got into it. I do think it helped me, because I think if I would be overanalyzing every little musical note that I wrote. Oh, is this like that episode? Is this like something that was done in the past? And we were able to be free and still within the episode's feel and genre, but we were able to do our own thing a little bit with it. And they had a better budget when it came back around, so the music could be bigger and better than it was before, hopefully.
Why do you think he hired you, and why do you think he keeps hiring you? Or picking you, selecting, I don't know.
I met Genndy through Tyler Bates, who I work with and I co-compose a lot of projects with. So they have this wonderful friendship. So he just keeps coming back to us. Hopefully we're professional and we make it easy. And at this point we have, because we've worked on with him so much, there's less to talk about. Like, we understand what he's saying or in a lot of times singing, because mm-hmm. he will come into the spotting session and will hit play on the animation, and there's no temp music in it at all, and he will very literally sing and go chicka 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 boom boom. And it's so wonderful working with a director like that, because instead of trying to over verbalize, okay, we want fast percussion, and then we need to hit that moment, he just sings it, and we understand immediately what that is. And because
so he's kind of composing it in a way.
Yeah, I don't know why I get credit. He writes the whole thing.
That, I think that's just that's awesome. Did you work on the Clone Wars micro series with him? Was that a part of your team?
I did not, but I would have loved to.
I'm always trying to dig up anything on that show, just because I loved it so much. And again, it's just about, you know, it's about his style and about and how much it shows up. So let's get to something about him that, you know, another thing that you are doing with him is we're here at Comic-Con today because there's a big celebration about the music in Genndy Tartakovsky's work. So tell us a little bit about this event and putting it together and what can we expect. So by the time anybody listens to this, it's already going to be long gone, but we're recording this interview kind of just a few hours before. They were literally practicing going through it. It's going to be a full... It's an orchestra?
It's a small orchestra.
It's a small orchestra. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about this project and, you know, what can we expect?
Yeah, about 2 months ago, we got the call from Adult Swim that they, of course, do this wonderful festival every year.
It's the carnival.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, it's so much fun. And, such a cool thing. And they wanted to do some kind of musical performance, and we're open to what that would be. Of course, Unicorn Warriors Eternal is our newest venture with Genndy that the public can view. So that, and plus the music for that is so thematic and melodic and epic that it was just an obvious choice to be one to play. So the first thing we're going to do is play the first episode of Unicorn Warriors Eternal front, top to bottom, and where the cues are, where the music is in the show, the orchestra will be swelling in and out and coming in with those moments. So it was very much a lot of work, a lot of reorchestrating and things, making this playable for real people, real players, as opposed to watching my computer and writing things to hit the cut. It needs to be, you know, the time signatures, the key changes, all of these things need to be kind of playable. And we didn't write it initially with that intent. It's very complicated music, and it wasn't arranged for the orchestra either, so we rearranged some of the music. So we're playing through the first episode of Unicorn. And, of course, because we've done all these shows with Genndy, and like you said, the music is such a primal. It's such a huge part. There's no dialogue in that show. It's huge. So we offered, how about Tyler and I join the orchestra on stage after this episode is aired? Tyler grabs his guitar. I grab my drumsticks, because those are our instruments. And we rock out to some primal cues and some Samurai Jack cues, and kind of as an encore, like, wow the audience at the end. So it's fun. We get this, like, orchestral, the entire episode as it was intended, and then we get more of kind of the rock show towards the end with the orchestra playing with us, and we rehearsed this morning and they're phenomenal.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. This sounds just great.
Good.
What can we look forward for? I know there's a lot of uncertainty with the industry. Hopefully that's not touching you too bad.
Yeah.
What do you got coming up in the future? How can we find you again?
Thank you. Yeah, you can find me. My name is Joanne Higginbottom. Yeah. I'm on all the, you know, the social media platforms with Genndy Tartakovsky. We have a movie coming out either later this year or early next year, again depending on the strike. It's called Fixed.
Is it animated or?
It's animated. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's a feature with Sony Animation and New Line. It's hilarious.
Like a cinema release.
Movie theaters. That's in release right now. That's the intention. It is hilarious, and it is R-rated.
Oh, okay. You always gonna have fun with that.
Oh, my. It's I can't.
And it's not that Adult Swim doesn't push it sometimes anyway, but.
No, but that seems to be more in, like, the artistic and violence, in a way. And this is raunchy as hell. Yeah. This is good. Really, it's so funny. So, yes, that's coming out very soon.
How do you score raunch?
Honestly, we have it's
saxophone. No, I'm just kidding.
There is a saxophone in it. There is actually. It's funny because when we first approached the project with Genndy, we were like, "Well, how are we going about this?" And he's like, "We need to think of this more of a adult comedy." And when you see, I don't know, Superbad or all the, like, The Hangover and those kind of movies. And he's like, it's animation, so it needs to be bigger and better and different, but we need to figure out how we can hit all those comedic points and do that in our own way. And actually what we've landed on, which is fantastic, is kind of funk and soul music. So it's been really different and really fun to do that. It still has orchestra in it, and there's, you know, for the more emotional parts and the action and stuff like that. And we are actually recording string orchestra in Glasgow on Thursday for the project.
Wow.
It sounds, I'm so happy with the score. I'm very excited for everyone to hear it, because it's a completely new genre for me. I had to do so much research to learn about that kind of music. I didn't grow up with it.
Well, what is your background?
So I'm born in Wales, uh-huh, in the UK. Uh-huh. I was always in... drum kit is my main instrument. I taught myself guitar. I played clarinet and cello, and I sang. But I loved songwriting, and I was always in bands growing up. That said, I studied classical music, and I studied music theory properly. And I ended up going to the Royal Welsh Conservatoire of Music to do composition there and learn how to be an engineer in a recording studio. And I was kind of like, how did those two things mesh? And to me, that was film music. It was in the studio, but it's also writing for multiple instruments. But doing that to picture, I love it. It's mm-hmm. so fun. Mm-hmm.
Well, you actually get to see your work, like hear your work. So I think that's something else.
And it's so fun when people reach out to you and love the show. It's so wonderful, especially walking around Comic-Con. My gosh, when you see people dressed up as Spear or some of the characters from Unicorn or Samurai Jack or something, it warms my heart that they love the show that much, that we put so much love into creating, that they would go out and copy the costume and put all that effort into it. It's awesome.
There is a negative side to fandom. Have you had any bad experiences?
I am fortunate enough, touch wood if there's any here. No, not yet. I know Tyler had a little bit of a stalker at some point, so that was not as fun. Although he worked with Marilyn Manson for a while and toured with him and did that, so I think that came more from the rock star stuff than it did from the film stuff. But no, so far so good, okay. And everyone has been so lovely and positive about everything we do. Just got to keep writing good music, huh?
Yeah. Keep on knocking it out. As a final question, our show is called Saturday Morning Serial, and we celebrate the themes of Saturday morning TV that we not only grew up with, but that grew up with us. And I don't know if in Wales they had Saturday morning cartoons. Was that a thing for you when you were growing up?
Yeah, it definitely was.
And did you guys have to, like, get up early Saturday morning because you didn't have school and your parents were probably asleep? Uh-huh. Like, did you guys have to go and fight for that spot on the couch? And if you did, what was the cartoon that you were watching when you were a kid? And also, what was the sugary cereal that you were eating?
All right.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, I would wake up on the weekends, and of course my parents had had a couple too many beers the night before, and they would put me on the couch and they would give me my cereal and my milk, and then they would go back to bed, and I would have a good few hours of pure watching time. And otherwise it was always limited, so that was actually the best time every weekend.
Exactly.
That I got TV time, because they were probably hungover. But I would...
I mean, you mean off work? Yes.
Sure,
they were
sleeping
because they work hard all week.
I mean, they're great parents, nothing against
them. I know. I'm sure they are.
I'm trying to think. I actually watched a lot of Dexter's Laboratory.
Wow.
So that's wonderful turn of events,
that's
now
amazing.
Working with Gendy.
Yeah. That's kind of his first big hit.
Yeah. And I remember loving it. I can still sing the theme song now. Yeah. It's wonderful. When I was younger, I used to put movies on more so than anything. And it was, of course, when you're really young, a lot of the Disney movies, Snow White and The Lion King and Lady and the Tramp. I've probably seen it 1,000 times.
Have a favorite cereal? Like, was there a favorite? Like, did your parents let you, chomp into some sugar?
Absolutely. Yeah. It wouldn't be good. I'd be hyper afterwards, but yes.
Well, that's what you do in the morning.
And I wonder if you have it here. You tell me, Frosties?
Well, we have Frosted Flakes. Maybe it's probably...
Is it the Tiger?
Yep.
And it's the... That's the one.
They're great.
That's totally it.
Okay.
That's totally it.
All right. Thank you so much for your time today. We're looking forward to the concert. Me and my crew are going.
Great.
So we're just going to watch you rock out.
Enjoy. I can't wait.
Oh, thank you so much.
Nice to meet you.
Everybody knows Frosties taste great.
Damn.
They know how to do commercials out there.
Why didn't they just call them Frosted Flakes? Like, what?
Because it probably would have added 40 seconds to that commercial, quite frankly. But, man, to keep that energy up, and I know enough about the world, or the white world, to know that was Australian.
Yeah.
Not Welsh,
okay,
as where Ms. Higginbottom is from.
That's right. Okay.
But I think that was on target. That was amazing. How have we never explored how much more bonkers cereal commercials are in other countries?
I know.
Really?
Think about all the times that we've reused cereal commercials.
They're going to taste great. Hey. I am going to wake up Tony saying that tomorrow.
Yeah, Tony's wow. Like, they're great. You know, like, it's the same Tony the Tiger voice, the American Tony the Tiger. They're great.
But he wasn't even, like, the star of it. He was just kind of, like, hanging out.
I think he was just trying to hang on and keep up.
But they were like, all right, so... you know, in the pitch meeting, how do we rhyme a lot of words? Crate. Yeah, they're going to come out of a crate because they're great.
I don't think they even use the word crate. It was just great.
There is a fucking crate that...
They're going to taste great.
I think there was a crate.
There was a crate. Yeah, I looked at the video. Yeah, you weren't...
See, now I am curious because I saw no video.
Yeah, I'm
dying to know what the video of the... I'm sorry, listeners, you are sucked into this audio-only description of a TV commercial as I am. But
I had the vantage point. Yeah, it was a bunch of white kids.
Australian kids, we think. Or it could have been Wales.
In the land of Oz.
Okay.
Or the United States. It's going to taste great.
And here's a crate.
All right. I think he says, and the Empire State.
Yes, that's it.
Boy. Wow, isn't that fun?
That is so much more work than we put into cereal commercials here. And I've been brainwashed by them for 4 decades. I'm ashamed. There is a cereal commercial gap that we as junior Oppenheimers need to worry about.
We have never really explored this.
We just learned.
We're gonna need a little time, I think, is what it is.
Next episode theme... cereals that are named something different in other countries, like Frosties.
Yeah.
All right.
And it is, and it's a shame because Flakes would have rhymed so well.
Well, I know that
everything that they
maybe Flake.
I know
is
pejorative this because
you know what tastes great, Frosted Flakes.
I know this because my
I left it on the table, mate.
Half of my family is from fucking Mexico, right? So when it's true. And so when we would go visit family, we would be taken to the grocery store and they're like, oh, what kind of, and then our Frosted Flakes over there was called Sucaritas. And sucad is sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically like sugar flakes.
Sugar flakes. All
right. Yeah. It was really cute. And then they had their accompanying
sugar bits.
Sucaritas.
Flake is a tough word.
It was
to
basically
translate.
Like, well, I think bits and flakes is that's a synonym, right?
Well, I don't know. I never had a bowl of Alpha Flakes growing up.
Yeah, but that's the sugar flakes. Frosted is a word for the sugar.
I think that's what, and again,
it's a euphemism.
When they brought it to Europe,
they just call it Frosties.
Australia as well as Welsh.
Yeah.
14,000-mile difference, but they just called them Frosties.
Yeah, but
whereas
it's the same
here,
thing.
They don't mind calling them Flakes. Now, all of a sudden, I do feel insulted.
I'm kind of angry right now, the more we talk about it. Like, what are you else are you hiding from us,
are
Wales?
They calling us Flakes?
Yeah. No, I think it's just that's like, the way that they express the term of Flakes. That's the way that they express Flakes. It's just by calling
it
Frosties.
But right next to the Frosties in their grocery stores, or I'm sorry, tienda de groserías, is it Rice Krispies or Rice Geniuses?
Wait, where do you get the geniuses from?
Well, because obviously they give them more credit.
Oh,
everybody
I don't
think so. Who eats cereal somewhere else. Now, yeah, maybe
look,
I'm
we're never really going to know this. And, you know, obviously, clearly, we're not smart enough to figure this out. So why don't we talk about our amazing guest. Wasn't she great?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought she was great, and she was
Joanna
such a
Higginbottom.
Sport.
Yeah. Quite honestly, we don't deserve to talk to someone.
Yeah, for she was sure. fantastic.
Into it.
Talent level. Way above.
So high, yeah. So charming, so fun. She was very, what's the term? What am I looking
energetic?
For?
Energetic?
Just very gracious, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought she was just great. And we were in the Hard Rock Hotel. We were, like, in the same, like, there was, like, guitars around us of, like, Steven Tyler. Well, there was, like, Aerosmith guitars and, like, Rolling Stone guitars. And, like, there was, like, we were in this cool room, cool environment. And it was just the two of us in there. It was great. So I just thank you so much for being so kind and, again, gracious with your time. And then she was just, like, she, like, extended an invitation for us to go see the performance, which was an outside installation of the, it was the Adult Swim.
Which again, you could just be a wandering vagrant and catch this. You do not need a hotel room,
speaking of
a Comic-Con pass, anything.
And speaking of that, your boy Johnny Heck slid in with Marcy.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Speaking
of
vagrants.
And so this was, okay, so every year, Adult Swim actually has literally a traveling carnival that goes to other cities. Okay.
Adult Swim
is
kind of our jam.
I know. I don't know if we bite
them or they bite us, but they send us much more merch than we send them.
Like really, really early on in the first like 5 years of this show, like they would send us a lot of gifts and a lot of gifts and a lot of swag, and it was just so much fun. Like, you know,
not to say they still don't.
They don't anymore. They've been bought out a few times, but whatever. It's okay. You guys have paid your dues with us. You know, we've paid our dues with you. But yeah, so they actually do this kind of traveling. You know, it goes to like Oklahoma, New York, you know, like it goes everywhere. Oklahoma, New York, everywhere. Okay. So,
and the rest.
And the rest of the story. So, yeah. But every year it basically starts in LA, then it goes to Comic-Con, San Diego, and then it kind of rolls around. But it's literally a carnival. They have like skeet ball, they have the little chicken heads that you throw the baseballs at, and you can win.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Don't explain. Keep going.
Yeah. The little chicken heads that pop up and you throw the, I don't mean like, they're not crack hoes.
Again,
no.
Well, let's keep going.
He also said skeet ball. I think you mean skee ball.
Isn't like, it skeet?
No, skeet's something else.
Oh, man.
I mean, if we're picking all the threads apart, he said skeet's balls.
No, is it skee ball?
Yeah.
Like S-K-E-E?
Yeah.
I thought it was skeet.
Yeah,
I wish we could afford an editor.
The song goes skeet, 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 skeet. Yeah.
Why don't you just Google skeet really quick? And then,
pretty sure it's skeet. All right.
Anyway, while we get all this stuff off the walls here in the studio,
that's a whole
Mark
different
E,
game.
Why don't you bring this bad boy in?
All right, fine. Fair enough. So, there's a big carnival kind of thing. And so you get to go in there and you get prizes and stuff. And it's all Adult Swim. You guys done? Are you done?
As done as we're going to go.
I just want to make sure from the windows to the walls. Are you guys done?
Thank you for joining us, listeners.
Oh, fucking word.
Okay. So, yeah. So they literally have, like, their prizes and stuff are Adult Swim related. So like I have a Rick and Morty's bottle opener. You'll get like I have a little meatball coin purse. You know what I mean? Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's Skeeter,
like,
Jason.
Yeah. So like there's all these kind of cool prizes that you can win. And then so it's this really cool thing. Everybody waits in line. They got like a bouncy house. They got all this. It's so fun. So amazing. In 2023, they had a full-on stage, and then they had, you know, they were showing different things throughout the whole convention.
Like up on a big projector.
Yeah, like, and then they had people come
that
out.
Is
they had
good.
Guests.
You pay extra to have, like, the full-on presentation always outside of Comic-Con, where no one needs a ticket. Again,
they had, like, a mini orchestra, like horns and drums, and she was out there. And they had the episode on the screen as they performed it live.
Yeah, yeah. So this was actually called. So yeah, this particular one was called the Adult Swim Festival on the Green, Genndy Tartakovsky's Musical Experience. So composer Joanne Higginbottom's friend of the show and Tyler Bates will be joined by a live orchestra for the Genndy Tartakovsky Musical Experience, and it was basically like a. If I remember correctly, it was like a montage of Samurai Jack and like all these different, you know, kind of Genndy, you know, Genndy inspired, you know, works. And it was a live orchestra playing to the images that you saw, the scenes that you saw on the screen.
And she was the conductor of it.
And
so she had to follow the images on the screen.
She wasn't just the conductor, but she was the percussionist as well. So she was playing the timpani, I believe, at the same
time. I bet she was making 74 cents.
But also,
yeah. Against Danny
and Marky, let's paint the picture a little bit for those that weren't there. So we're standing there, and we're looking at the stage. We're behind Comic-Con right on the bay, but, you know, we're on the bay. What are we? We're looking at San Diego Bay. We're looking at the water.
Big bridge of Coronado.
Yeah, Coronado Bridge. Yeah. It was.
Looking at Coronado Island, and then behind, and like it's just this amazing.
For no matter how much you pay a scalper for tickets to get into Comic-Con, you cannot see the Coronado Bridge from inside.
Yeah, yeah, this is better. Yeah, this
no one ever mentions that,
and you're far enough away.
But again, if you're just a crazy person who wanders downtown, you got a great view.
Plenty of those, but we're also far enough away from the farts of Hall H campers. So it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. Yeah. You're right.
We were upwind from it.
But so. it was just this amazing experience. And then like what was like really cool is because I had had this long interview with her and she was just super cool and stuff. And, you know, I was there with Johnny Heck and like she was literally like on stage and she actually saw me. Yeah. And she was just like. You know, she like pointed and she was like, yo, what's up? You know, like it was so cool because I felt like I was a groupie. I felt like I was, like, it was so fun.
Marky showed his tits.
Yeah, he flashed my tits. You know? Yeah, it was awesome.
You did come home with the most beads I ever saw that year.
Yeah. But it was so much fun. And it was, I don't know, guys. It was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had at Comic-Con. And, you know, you do not need inside... You know, access to have a time like this. Just yes, go out there.
That is the point. Yeah. And that is true. As exclusionary as realistically San Diego really is, Comic-Con is so widespread. It's like an infection.
Yeah.
If you can't get inside the fluid-filled blister of Comic-Con, you could be all over that little weird rosacea.
In a nice open wound Comic-Con. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yes. Give it a little air. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Sunlight's I think that's the analogy, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
That's what we're shooting for, I believe.
Yeah. If you want to see Coronado Bay...
Mm-hmm.
Really, the worst thing you can get is a Comic-Con ticket.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Right?
Yeah.
Doesn't that not stand?
Fair enough.
Sure.
And beyond that, I don't know. I feel like that's about enough of this.
I'm done.
I'm good.
See y'all at Comic-Con, everybody.
Woo!
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Oh, this is enough of this.